Mike Braun under fire in the latest Senate GOP debate. Todd Rokita flips, says yes to the debate commission. That plus Joe Donnelly is on the air and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 20th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana's Republican Senate candidates spent much of their latest debate attacking each other, with Congressman Todd Rokita and Luke Messer focusing much of their attention on former state lawmaker Mike Braun.
The three Republican candidates had almost no policy differences. They support President Trump's tariffs and military action in Syria and say the Mueller investigation is a witch hunt and should end immediately. Much of the debate circled around personal attacks, but in a shift from their last meeting, Congressman Messer and Rokita at times almost teamed up to take shots at Braun.
You know, he acts as an outsider, but every time he rolls up his sleeve, he's rolling his sleeves up to raise our taxes.
And I think the answer to the question you asked is no. What he told you is not that he sought counsel, that he had his own opinion based on some training that he'd had. There's some real ethics questions about what he did there.
Do the attacks on Braun signal he could be this race's front runner? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwann is the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, are Messer and Rokita worried about Mike Braun?
Is this an IQ test? I mean, obviously they're worried about Mike Braun. I mean, he was a non-entity the first couple of times around, and now he's the focus of the targeted attacks by both of them. It tells you more than anything else what the polling numbers are showing. But then Braun has his problems today when it was revealed by the Journal-Gazette that he has a number of lawsuits for illegally underpaying his attorneys, his employees, in a number of different states. So it's kind of a pattern that he's been paying out for, and he's also being sued for. So it's... they all have skeletons that can be discussed at length.
There has been an increased focus in recent weeks on Mike Braun. How did he handle being the subject of a lot of those attacks in that debate?
Well, it's the first time the focus has been only on Mike Braun, and I think that's a reflection of he's had a really good couple of weeks. He's had some really good ads that have come out and hit, kind of established him as the outsider candidate. And the other two, Congressman Rokita and Messer, they're starting to kind of pick up on some issues that I think they need to be careful, because they're picking up on issues that were advocated by State House Republicans, specifically the transportation bill. This is a two-year transportation bill where the state analyzed the needs, analyzed what is the cost going to be, and ultimately had to raise the gas tax and find revenue from other parts of state government to fund it. But it's fully funded for a generation. It's far more comprehensive than anything that Congress has done in the last few years, and I'd worry if I were those guys that if you start attacking Braun on his State House record, the State House Republicans may close ranks on Braun in defense of their own policy decisions the last couple of years. I think they have to. So I think it's going to, and I think it's only going to get more intense over the next 2 weeks, because I think Braun has the wind at his back right now.
If you're Mike Braun and you're starting to be the focus of these attacks, what do you do to sort of adjust?
You basically, I think, fight fire with fire, probably. He has taken an approach where he has been positioning himself, as Mike suggested, as the outsider. And his spots have played up that angle in humorous fashion. And that's all well and good. But if, in fact, the numbers are suggesting not only that that's why people are now ganging up on him, and this is, it's odd, it's the one endeavor where you don't want people to be nice to you, because if you're in a political campaign and somebody's being nice to you, it means they don't take you seriously. They're just patting you on the head and assuming you can
go along your way.
So this is oddly good news for him, but he does need to respond probably in kind.
Less playful, a little more,
well, because,
a little
because
sharper.
This is... there's not a lot of time to correct perceptions, so you
right.
really have to act quickly, it seems to me, when in this compressed last phase of the campaign.
At first glance in this debate, did Braun do well to parry off those attacks?
I think so. I think John's right about being ready to respond in kind, but I will say that I think Mike Braun has run a really good campaign to this point. He's been on point in his message. His message has contrasted nicely with his opponents, and I think the people's response is showing up in the attacks that he's gaining. So to abandon that now would probably be a mistake. I'm sure he's got some powder in reserve, if you will, to go after in the last 3 weeks here. But I've been impressed with his campaign, and I think I said early on, and I feel it now. I think, as Mike said, he's got the wind at his back. Now, it's a tricky
long
wind
3 weeks
to keep an eye on, but he's in good shape.
Lots of different directions.
Yeah, it does.
I'm intrigued with the suggestion that Mike says it's going to get more heated. I'm not sure there's much room there to.
If they're going to start attacking his state house, his record as a member of the House, and you've got all these House Republicans running for re-election, I mean, they're going to have to go in and back him up.
I think that's a great point too, because then you're essentially pitting Hoosier Republicans with Washington Republicans,
and
that's not a good thing.
I don't think Washington Republicans are going to win.
No.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: has Mike Braun become the frontrunner in the Republican U.S. Senate primary? A, yes; B, no; or C, it's too close to call. Last week's question: should Speaker Paul Ryan's retirement have Hoosier Republicans worried? 68% say yes, 32% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Todd Rokita made a U-turn this week, announcing he will take part in the nonpartisan Indiana Debate Commission's upcoming debate.
Who do you trust?
The Indiana Debate Commission announced last month Congressman Todd Rokita declined to participate in its GOP primary debate. He was the first candidate in the commission's 10-year history to skip one. But now Rokita's campaign says it will take part. In a statement, campaign spokesperson Nathan Brand says Rokita's presence will act as a, quote, check on his opponents, fellow Congressman Luke Messer and former state lawmaker Mike Braun, and on the debate's moderator, conservative commentator Abdul Hakim Shabazz. The Republican congressman's campaign sharply criticizes Shabazz, arguing he's anti-Trump. The Rokita camp also says Shabazz, a black Muslim, made a false racism claim against Rokita. That came after Shabazz criticized the campaign for sending a white staffer in a Barack Obama mask to mock candidate Mike Braun.
Mike O'Brien, is this a blatant flip-flop from Rokita?
I think the initial decision fit into what is his broader strategy, which is to be the establishment attacking outsider modeled after Trump, right? And so this tactical decision to not be a part of the debate fit into that. The problem with that was the reaction was awful. These debates, the debates are a good exercise, and I wish they were more widely viewed. A lot of times they're kind of gaffe machines, so the only news that comes out of them is if you say something bad, or no news comes out of them, or just a story about the debate itself comes out, and it's kind of a neutral play for everybody. He kind of had to make this decision because the reaction was fairly negative and much higher profile than being a part of the debate ever would have been. You know, so tactically, I don't think it was a flip flop in the sense that like the facts changed, so he had to change his mind. You know, and the environment changed, and the reaction was not what he expected. And I think he's right to go and be a part of this and be a check on our friend Abdul.
Yes, a check. A check on noted liberal Abdul Hakim Shabazz.
That's a big job.
Yeah. Is this really the only thing? I mean, after the reaction, even from, I mean,
it's
the folks
clearly,
on conservative radio jumped
flip-flop.
Up on
and he would have lived with the reaction if he was still leading in the polls. Okay, he would have. So it's clearly a flip-flop. Go out on a limb, Mike, and call it what it is. It is. But, you know, the irony of this is I wish some information came out of the debate. I'd like them to talk about, for example, the deficit that both Rokita and Messer have helped to exacerbate after years of hearing how Barack Obama was exploding the deficit and was fiscally irresponsible. These are going, they're just spending money willy-nilly out there, cutting taxes willy-nilly without any way to pay for it. Or maybe why they were willing to take 400,000 Hoosiers off the insurance rolls and decimate Mike Pence's insurance plan for the state of Indiana. Or maybe why they think it's okay to kill Indiana farmers by having a trade war with China where a third of our soybeans go. You know, those kinds of issues are worth discussing, and they're not discussing them. I mean, they're doing this nonsense food fight amongst themselves. Voters aren't going to be any more informed as a result of this debate or the next debate about where they will stand on the issues of importance to Hoosiers. Just that they're all with Trump. They don't want to be a check and balance. They don't want to be an independent part of the government, that one of three co-equal branches. They want to be a Trumper.
Was this Rakita's only move after the reaction to not doing the debate?
It was the only rational move. I think he could have remained bullheaded and suffered the consequences, which would be worse than what it appears to be now. But I think a lot will be riding on this debate performance for him. He's certainly increased his own stakes. He certainly agitated the moderator. It'll be curious to see what kind of questions are directed to the panel and how they're directed. That's not to imply that Abdul will be unfair, but I'm sure that he's sharpening his questions a little bit. So a lot is riding on this for Todd Rokita, and if he doesn't have a good debate, it will hurt him.
Yeah, has he really put himself in the spotlight with this back and forth?
I think he's doing the right thing in terms of, you know, truth, justice, and the American way. We candidates should participate in debates. So he's doing the right. He arrived at the right conclusion, but he did probably hurt himself tactically, as John suggests, by taking a debate that might not have been that closely followed. I mean, certainly there are the political junkies who would follow it, and if there was a major gaffe, yes. But, you know, he was guarding against that, didn't want to be part of that. Now, basically, whoever said has raised the stakes, that's exactly right, because now there will be, you know, if there were 10 spotlights on him before, there will be 20 now. And people will be parsing every word in a manner probably that they might not have before. So I guess the moral of the story is take part in debates and you won't have these problems.
Well, there are two debates still to come. We'll be talking about them, of course, on this show. There's one from the Allen County GOP that organized that, and then, of course, the Indiana Debate Commission debates, which can be seen on this and many of these public television stations. Well, Democratic U.S. Senate incumbent Joe Donnelly released his first TV ad of the campaign this week.
Donnelly's ad shows him driving, filling up, cleaning, and servicing a campaign RV as he goes around the state. The ad tries to play into the everyman image Donnelly has cultivated in office.
I don't work for any political party. I'm the hired help. I'm hired by you. I work for you.
The six-figure ad buy will run statewide.
Right. John Katzenberger. Mitch Daniels famously used an RV, driving it around the state for his campaign, staying in people's houses. Is this an homage from Joe Donnelly, or is this a ripoff?
I'm thinking Joe Donnelly would call it an homage. Mitch Daniels would call it a ripoff. Whatever it is, it's good politics. And, you know, kudos to Donnelly for, again, you know, playing the middle road, because he's looking ahead. He doesn't have the primary in front of him like his opponents do in the fall. And so he's using this time for his benefit. And I think this is a device that we've seen work very well. I think Joe Donnelly can make it work for him as well as Mitch Daniels did, and it's a good tactic at a time when his opponents are ripping each other to shreds.
As I said, you know, he's continuing to build up that everyman image that he's been cultivating for years and years and years. Does it play authentically?
Yeah, I think it does. Now, it would not for every candidate. Certainly there are candidates who, you know, if I were advising them, I'd say the last thing you want to do is be seen in a flannel shirt, you know, in an RV, because you're going to get questions that you won't be able to answer and you're going to look like an idiot. But I think one of his strong suits, as we've seen, is his ability to work a room, work a crowd as the everyman. And it seems genuine, so I think it is a net plus for him, especially against the backdrop of, you know, what's better than driving, you know, the idyllic highways and byways of Indiana while everybody else is sharpening their sabers.
John mentioned this, which is he doesn't have a primary to look forward to. He doesn't have to start attacking other people. That will probably come at some point. Is this a good ad from Joe Donnelly right now?
Yeah, I think so. I think if Mike Braun wins the primary, there's going to be like a run on blue button-down shirts. If you want one, you better buy it now, because the campaigns are about to buy them all up in Indiana. Strategically, he's got to do this because his numbers are lower than they should be for re-election. You know, he shouldn't be in the low 40s for a re-elect. If he's in the strong position that everybody, you know, that the political class believes he's in, he shouldn't be in the low 40s. That would concern me. So this is the that's the reason he has been doing, you know, he did radio in Indianapolis, kind of strategically to try to move those numbers up and get them where they need to be. Doing TV now when he's got clear air on while the Republicans are in a spirited fight in our primary.
spirited. I like
to get
that.
It to move his numbers up. So fight. I mean, he has to do it because he's just not impressed enough people in 6 years to get his numbers where they need to be to wait.
You hope.
If you look at the ad, he's talking about deficits, talking about supporting our military. If you didn't know Joe Donnelly was a Democrat, would you know that Joe Donnelly is a Democrat?
He's a man who works for
Joe Donnelly,
according to him.
And the irony of this is he's been going around the state for the last 6 years. He's been everywhere in the state in the last 6 years. Now he's doing it instead of borrowing people's bedrooms to sleep in as he goes from community to community. He actually has an RV he can sleep in each night. So, I mean, it's the right thing to do. It, you know, every candidate running statewide has some kind of thing they use, whether it's the RV or, as Barron Hill did, walking the state or, you know, riding the bicycle like Jim Johns had done. So, I mean, this is a good thing for him to cover the area again, remind people that he's been in Washington working for Hoosiers and is a middle-of-the-road, common-sense Democrat, in sharp contrast to the right-wingers that the Republicans have running on their side.
And there are issues that he has some legitimacy on. They're not
the veterans
issues.
Issues.
I mean, they're not issues. Where this could backfire is if all of a sudden he had this kind of profile in D.C. in terms of his voting, and then all of a sudden came and said, I'm a champion of veterans, and deficit reduction.
He
has a consistency.
Well, a report in the Indy Star this week resurfaced revelations that Luke Messer had 2 DUIs over 20 years ago. The report focuses on Messer's decision not to widely and publicly disclose the DUIs when he first sought public office, running in a Republican caucus to replace a state lawmaker who was killed by a drunk driver. Some members of that caucus did know, and Messer also told family members of the lawmaker he sought to replace. And the DUIs have both come up since, in 2009 and again in 2012, when Messer first ran for Congress. John Schwanes, will this story, given the length of how far back these allegations, or not allegations, how far back these things go, will this register on most voters' radar?
I think one thing that American voters like are forgiveness stories or,
redemption stories.
Somebody who can go have a second and third act. And I think a lot of people probably did things 20 or more years ago that they're thinking to themselves, gee, if I ever...
Including you, Johnny.
My record is relatively clean, counselor.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you didn't do them.
That's a good point. But if this happened more recently or if there had been some sort of aggravating factor, leaving the scene or trying to flee police, let's put it this way. If Joe Donnelly gets one while he's driving the RV around the state,
that'll be a
bigger
story.
It's a big story. But 20 years ago, I think there was a capacity for forgiveness.
So if this is the redemption, Messer's in his second or third act, is this story mean the curtain's about to close on?
The denouement, huh? I think that this won't register in the race, really. Boy, they have thrown everything but the kitchen sink at each other, and I think that's probably next. The situation, troublesome, is old. This is news that has come out in previous races. It's news that the public has known. If this was the first surfacing this situation, it'd be a much different story. I think it's a good reminder for people that you shouldn't drink and drive, and a good reminder that if you're a candidate, let everybody know about these kinds of things so that they don't haunt you later.
It's come up in past campaigns.
It's come up in past campaigns. The only thing that concerns me about this is it is unclear from reading the stories in the paper whether it came up in advance of the precinct committeeman's selection of him to replace the state representative who was killed by a drunk driver. I mean, that's what launched his career. He would not be in the situation he is in now but for that appointment. And I think that's concerning for some people. The fact that it's 20 years old and it hasn't happened since, that's all to his credit. But the fact that it wasn't disclosed, or apparently, if those stories are correct...
Not widely disclosed.
Well, not...
He says he talked to the family, though.
The family's fine, but it doesn't have to be widely disclosed.
It seems like some precinct committeemen
knew, some
didn't.
It's just all the precinct committeemen that voted should have been aware of that at the time. and then they could make an informed judgment about whether it was too soon or whether the circumstances of his predecessor's demise disqualified him. And it launched his career.
given how long ago this is, if it doesn't hurt Messer, because it has been out there in most cases, does it end up hurting the person, it seems like, who planted this, which is the Todd Rokita campaign?
Well, it depends how they talk about it and where they talk about it. You know, this idea that he should disclose that he's obligated to disclose something like this. I understand the circumstances of the caucus and what brought that vacancy about, that kind of tragic circumstance. But the idea that you still years later have to lead with, well, before I get to where I'm at on the issues, let me tell you three stupid things I did in college. You know, and that's part of the assertion here, is that he should include this in his resume, that he's made these mistakes in the past, and it happened, he's apologized for it, and he should have the right to move on and not deal with it again.
Well, the Rokita campaign got a rap on the knuckles this week from President Donald Trump's re-election campaign.
Last week, Rokita received an endorsement from the leaders of the Trump-Pence Indiana campaign, and now some of his yard signs proudly display that he has the Trump-Pence endorsement from 2016 Indiana team leaders. The president's reelect isn't happy about those signs and formally asked the Rokita campaign to remove them. The Rokita camp's response, quote, "We do not comment on yard sign strategy."
And Eleni, is this a blow to Rokita as each candidate tries to tie themselves as closely as possible to the president?
This was bound to happen. And anybody who thought that all he wanted was Tony Samuel and Rex Early's endorsement and not be able to say the Trump campaign spokesperson doesn't know Todd Rokita. So he was prepared to do exactly what he did. And anybody endorsing him should have expected him to do exactly what he did. And as sure as I'm sitting here, those signs will not be taken down, okay? So anybody who knows Todd Rokita knows how close and sometimes over the line he plays. They shouldn't be surprised by this at all.
One of those signs was in Avon, which I think you passed by this morning. It was still up. Is Todd Rokita going to pay a price for this?
We'll see. In the immortal words of Happy Gilmore, talk about your all-time backfires. You know, I mean, you got to mind the line on when you're taking. And this, we've seen this happen in other campaigns, and it's not a, you know, this isn't a partisan strategy. But we have seen in other cases where people have taken liberties with either positions people have taken privately or not taken, or certainly not taken publicly, in terms of endorsements and trying to borrow that support. And if you go over the line, it backfires on you, and it's far worse than maybe the benefit. We'll see, have to see if it's worse than the benefit of having the endorsement.
The yard signs are up and they stay up, okay? You had a one-day story that the Trump campaign wrapped him on the knuckles, okay? The average voter out there is not paying the same attention, I don't think, that we are.
Well, that's probably true, but this also gives his opponents a way to criticize him as well.
They don't have other opportunities
for
that?
Oh, this just gives him a nice hold because, gee, who was the first one who made a big deal out of being the Trump candidate and has said that every step of the way, and now Trump has said, time out, wait a minute, and that's a T-ball waiting for a slugger to knock it over the fence.
He'll come back and say, my two opponents weren't endorsed by Trump either. You want
that? But all three campaigns have done everything, every little thing they can pull at to say, I'm with Trump. This is the Trump campaign saying, you're not that with Trump, Todd Rokita. Is that a real problem for him as we get down into the...
Well, it's probably on a par with what we talked about a week or two ago when people dredged up comments from Todd Rokita saying that Donald Trump was vulgar and
not presidential.
Profane.
I guess, I've talked about normal political environment in recent weeks. If this were normal, something like this might resonate. But, I mean, there's so much. Same thing
in
at
the
federal level. There's
chamber.
Just when there's 10 things a day that in the past each one might have been cause of concern, but now we're awash in them.
Yeah, it's and this just is, like the presidency.
What I was alluding to.
They say bad press, you know.
Well,
as
it's
long
just,
as your name
there's
is
a saturation
out there.
Point,
right.
I guess. Is.
Well, finally, an Indianapolis firehouse this week faced a new challenge. A woman brought in her pet raccoon that was stoned off the neighbor's marijuana. Firefighters recommended the woman bring the raccoon home to sleep it off. Mike O'Brien, is this a blow to marijuana legalization advocates?
I don't know what to do with this at all.
It's 420.
I need more information. I need more information. Did the raccoon, were they blowing it in the raccoon's face? Did he find it in the garbage?
I think
garbage?
He probably ate it.
Yeah, he had to eat it, right? Yeah. You can't get a raccoon stoned by blowing smoke in his face. I don't think.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you think?
Have you tried
that? They do want to research marijuana at the federal level.
Yeah, this would be part of the project.
Will we see the Indiana prosecutors use this in the state house next
year? I'm not sure who is stoned here. A pet raccoon? I mean, come on.
I'm glad they didn't put the raccoon in the baby box.
Oh, boy.
Just leave it there. Oh, I didn't expect
well,
that
Well, check
one
it to first
up.
To make sure nothing else is in there. That's, you
know. Oh,
gosh. All I know is my wife's reaction was the same as yours, which was, who has a pet raccoon? But I didn't, honestly,
not,
when I put this story
together.
It may
not only be the raccoon who's stoned, is
yeah.
the point.
Well, when I put this story in the show, I didn't even realize it was 420 today, so I don't know what that
awesome.
Says about me. It just,
the smoking
it's
get
synergy.
The raccoon eyes?
It's
or
synergy.
What would be the
talk about
term?
The Senate race again? It was going so well.
Speaking of wanting to get stoned. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.